Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We continue with our live coverage on the takeaway of the situation on the Korean Peninsula. Early this morning, North Korea fired 200 rounds of artillery at a military base on the South Korean island of Yongpyeong. The hour-long barrage along the disputed sea border left two South Korean Marines dead, 50 other people or so injured. Dozens of houses were on fire. And joining us from South Korea is our friend Brian Myers. He's a researcher of North Korean ideology and propaganda at Dongseo University. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
I want to talk about, we had a conversation earlier about whether or not this is a one-off kind of situation in which the North is deliberately provoking the situation in order to get assistance because they're having a crisis over food, or whether this is an escalation, a continuation in the timeline in which the last incident was the sinking of the South Korean warship that left so many people dead. Which do you think it is?
I think the latter is to me the more likely story. In the United States, we have a tendency to assume that all of North Korea's actions derive from its desire to take part in six-party talks with a stronger hand and so on. Really, North Korea's main problems are domestic in nature. This is a regime that needs to justify its existence. And since it's failed on the economic front, it uses pride in the nation's military as the way to justify its existence and rally people around the Kim Jong-il regime. So we have been seeing provocations for the past few years. We had that missile launching last year. We had an underground nuclear test also last year. And then, as you say, we had the sinking of the Cheonan, which upped the ante a little bit. And I think the two incidents are connected in as much as at that time, the South Korean public pretty much broadcast its reluctance to go to war, its reluctance to retaliate militarily. So I think by showing a certain amount of tolerance for North Korea at that time, they may have made today's events more likely.
And you're describing a situation, Brian Myers, where here's North Korea running out of options. You're the perfect person to translate these measures into some sort of grammar of North Korean propaganda and, as you say, an attempt to justify its existence for a desperate domestic audience. Is the use of the sea border a way of firing across the bow without actually doing something as provocative as firing, say, across the demilitarized zone? What is the history of using sea disputes? This was a firing on an island, the Yongpyeong. What's the history of using the maritime battlefield as sort of an alternative to the more provocative DMZ?
Yeah, it is a useful alternative in North Korea, in as much as the NLL, or the maritime border between the two Koreas, is disputed. So when North Korea violates that line or engages another kind of conflict with South Korea, the rest of the world is prepared to overlook it more than it would if North Korea were, say, to bombard the southern part of the peninsula itself. So these kinds of provocations do have a certain history. 1999, there was a skirmish in the West Sea, as the South Koreans call it, the Yellow Sea. Then we had another one in 2002 that left six South Korean sailors dead. Then there was a skirmish about a year ago, which the South Koreans apparently got the better of. Apparently they sank a North Korean ship. The last they saw, it was on fire. And many people think that the sinking of the Cheonan last March was North Korea's way of retaliating against South Korea's victory last November.
So in that pattern, then, let's take a look at this nuclear issue over the weekend. Is the opening of this uranium facility, which, again, they already have a plutonium capability in North Korea, a way of escalating without really escalating the nuclear debate in North Korea? Again, one of these half measures.
I think it is, because actually both of these incidents, both the disclosure of the uranium facility and the bombardment of this island, are similar in as much as North Korea probably expects that the outside world is going to make louder calls for dialogue. And this is what happened as soon as we heard about the uranium facility. You had lots of op-ed pieces and lots of public opinion in the United States saying a hard line with North Korea is not working. It's time to get back to the table and engage the North Koreans because nothing else is going to work. And that's exactly how the South Korean public reacted in late March after the Cheonan was sunk. So I think North Korea realizes that it really has very little to lose by engaging in these provocations. Neither the United States nor South Korea is willing to retaliate militarily, so the pressure really only builds on the Obama and Lee Myung-bak administration.
So then what does North Korea, I mean, obviously the entire world doesn't seem to have an appetite for open hostilities, open war between North and South Korea, and the diplomatic discussion would go on, would be protracted. So what does North Korea, do they in the end possibly get help? Do they get food aid? Do they get people back to the negotiating table?
Well, that's the question, is how South Korea reacts to this is going to be important. And I think that depends on the number of civilian deaths, if any, end up being reported. If there are only military deaths and damaged buildings, the South Korean public is likely to direct most of its anger at the Lee Myung-bak administration and saying it's your fault that North-South relations have deteriorated to this stage. If, on the other hand, it turns out that a significant number of civilians lost their lives on the island today, then I think South Korean public opinion could shift to a more hardline stance towards North Korea.
But Brian, I mean, this other scenario you're describing is perhaps even more chilling. You know, the longer this goes, perhaps the fig leaf comes off in North Korea, and the North Korean domestic population realizes you have no credibility. They're ignoring you. All these attacks do nothing, and that produces instability inside North Korea.
Well, exactly. I think to a certain extent that is what already happened to North Korea with its nuclear provocations. It was conducting underground nuclear tests, it was firing missiles, and it was generating a certain amount of national pride inside North Korea in regard to those things. But after a while, the North Korean public seems to have begun to feel a kind of missile fatigue, at which point the North Korean government began promising the North Korean people a drastic improvement in their living standards by the year 2012, which, as you know, is not very far away now. So I think that to a certain extent, these provocations may be North Korea's way of diverting the public's attention away from its failures on the economic front. The problem is it has to keep upping the ante in order to keep generating tension, in order to make the public rally around it. And sooner or later, it's bound to go a little bit too far for the U.S. and for South Korea.
Well, and I guess the clock is ticking. That's Brian Myers, a researcher of North Korean ideology and propaganda at Dongseong University. Thanks so much, Brian. We're talking about the situation on the Korean Peninsula. Actually, out in the Yellow Sea, North Korea fired 200 rounds of artillery at a military base there on the South Korean island of Yongpyeong. So far, as far as we know, two South Korean Marines dead, 50 people injured, dozens of homes on fire.